The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Local elections here will take place on June the 7th, but just what power does our local government actually have and how does it compare to the rest of Europe? Dr. Teresa Reedy is Senior Lecturer in the Department of Government and Politics at University College Cork, co-editor of Politics in the Republic of Ireland, and she joins me now. Teresa, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, first of all, looking at the powers that we used to have in local government and the powers we have now, there has been a diminution.
There has, over the last, especially 20 years or so, powers that previously were administered by local authorities on the ground have been centralised, oftentimes for very good reason. And the health board system was reformed and converted into the HSE in 2005. Education and training boards later kind of moved education responsibility around 2015. And there's been a process ongoing for a while now where water services are going to kind of fully be operational through Irish Water by 2026. Now, at the same time, there have been some small powers transferred to local authorities. They've been given greater role under what are called LEOs in terms of economic activation and some greater role working with social groups. But those are minor roles in comparison to the kind of larger roles they had. And I suppose the much bigger point is that when we look at what other European local governments do, I mean, the Irish one really is very minor and very weak by comparison.
I mean, you can look at it simply as parks, libraries, lighting the streets and picking up the rubbish. That's about it.
Yeah, roads, footpaths, and they do important cultural things as well in relation to, you know, local festivals, the tidy towns, and, you know, the country looks lovely. And so, you know, what they do reasonably well. But there's real potential for them to do a lot more. And there are lots of examples across Europe that we can look to where local authorities do more. But we have a long history of not really taking local government seriously. And we kind of were set on that path at independence, and we've never really kind of departed away from seeing local government as really administration at the local level. I mean, actually, strangely enough, the electoral and political arena is the more dynamic side of local government. You know, we still have lots of candidates contesting. The elections are now happening on a much more regular basis. But in terms of what local government does, we just don't give it enough attention.
OK, so central government unwilling to cede powers to local administrations. Is that it?
I mean, that's it. I mean, I suppose crucially what happens in other European countries is if local government kind of spots a gap in service provision, local authorities in many other European countries can move into that space and they can begin delivering service. But the legal structures that we have here mean that power has to be allocated to local government in the first place. So they don't have any capacity to initiate action on the ground, even where they see that there is a need for something. And I mean, that's the kind of fundamental problem. But then there's a bigger mindset where, you know, every time something comes up, we kind of set up a national agency or it's local or it's central government that manages it. We don't ever think that maybe there's a role for local government. Childcare is really the very obvious one here. You know, in the last 25 years, we've effectively been growing a national childcare service. And I mean, in many other European countries, they are pretty clear who are the people who know where the people are living, where the children are being born, where the childcare need is going to be. Well, it's local authorities. And so childcare services are delivered not exclusively on their own, but in tandem with central government. Whereas in the Irish case, we've just kind of automatically assumed that everything will be centralised out of Dublin.
So the plan is one size fits all, irrespective of the demography in your locality or the specific needs.
Absolutely. And we're a small country, so I'm sure there are lots of people saying, you know, do we really need lots of additional people working on the ground? But actually, it's a European principle that you should make decisions at the closest level to the people who need the services. It's the people in that area that are kind of best able to tailor them to the exact needs.
Yeah.
And lots of other smaller countries have much better local government. It's something of a function of our connection to Britain as well, obviously. Britain is next to us in a lot of these international rankings in terms of it also having very poor local government.
Straight away you think, well, time was when every household paid household rates and therefore the councils or corporation in Dublin's case had an income. Now they have a commercial rates income, but much smaller than it would be if the whole country were paying domestic rates. And I'm not advocating for them, but I'm saying that if you want to do loads of things, you've got to have the income to do it.
Yeah, and that's one of the really clearest things that jumps out at the international comparisons is how weak the financial base of local government is in Ireland. Now, we do have the local property tax, but the local property tax is really very small in Ireland in comparison to what you pay in a lot of other countries. And for a long time, we've been talking about expanding the tax base and making it more stable. And the local property tax was supposed to be part of that picture, but it's been brought in such a small way that it hasn't really altered the figures at all. Now, some of the larger urban councils like Dublin City Council and Cork City Council, they have greater financial scope. They have a lot more commercial rates and the properties, even with the low rate of tax, they're a bit more valuable. So they're getting in more revenues. But you have some parts of the country where they're almost entirely dependent on fiscal transfers from the centre. And again, as soon as something happens at the centre, if we have a small downturn, a recession, or even a catastrophic recession like what we had a decade ago, local government is the first place to be hit. And because they've no capacity to really structure their own revenues, they're very vulnerable in any of those scenarios.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned childcare as one area where local authorities should be more active. What about education? We have the Department of Education. We do have education and training boards. But in terms of, you know, who decides where a school should be, what sort of school it should be, what size it is, that's all done by Marlborough Street, isn't it?
It is. And that's another area where, again, because local authorities do a lot of the planning on the ground, the award, the planning permissions, they know where housing estates are going in. It's all connected in a lot of other European countries a bit more effectively in terms of the delivery of schools, building new schools, but also primary health centres, for example. It's not that, local authorities would be managing schools or setting the curriculum. It's in relation to kind of provision of services, because the agency on the ground is the one that really knows where the population is moving, how it's changing, what its age profile is, and what its likely needs are going to be. And they know that before the centralised agencies, because it's the local authorities that are giving the planning permission. And so it's only when that gets reported back that the other agencies catch on. And that's why some of the time we say, you know, why are we so behind the curve? Well, our system is designed whereby there are time lags built in for the information sharing.
And what about representation? I mean, how are we? One councillor per how many people compared to other countries?
We really are placing an enormous burden on our councillors, and our councillors are part-time people and they get very poor pay. We now have about one councillor for around 160,000 citizens, and that's just enormous in comparison to a lot of our other European neighbours. In Finland, it's about one councillor for every 20,000. It's a bit higher. It's about 50 to 60,000 in Denmark. Like, if we take Denmark, which is a country with a similar population, you know, every councillor in Ireland is dealing with three times as many constituents.
You see, here's the rub. We might improve that ratio, but if they can do nothing for you because they've so little power, does it matter how many we have except for the optics of it? You know, they're busy work saying I can help you, but they can't at all.
Well, no, that's a good point. If we're going to increase the numbers, I think we should definitely look at giving them more powers. But if we talk to any councillors, and the elections are on at the moment, quite a few have decided to leave because the workload is just not manageable. It's not compatible with lots of different jobs. So we're ending up with people who are have very specific types of flexible work, or who are retired, being the only people who are really able to actually work as councillors. And a lot of that has to do with the very high workload. I mean, if we look at the Dáil, you know, the Dáil is going to be increased up to over 170 at the next general election. And so we've been making changes at national level, but we haven't even had a conversation about making changes at the local level. We're still dealing with the same set of numbers that we've had for more than a decade. And in fact, we actually reduced the numbers of councillors in 2014 because we abolished a whole layer of local government when town councils were removed. So, you know, the burden really is very high on councillors, and it's just not being engaged with. And the people on the ground, most people, when you actually ask them, will tell you that their local councillor works very hard and they know them quite well.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, what is the job profile of a councillor? You know, what exactly, how do they spend their days if they're so busy and have no power? I mean, what do they do?
It's not entirely true that they have no power. They do have power. It's in very narrow areas, but quite a lot of them spend their times actually working with community groups around things like the tidy towns. They work with groups in relation to planning applications. They work with individuals, assisting them in their interactions with the state system, which isn't always as efficient as we'd like it to be. So they provide an awful lot of assistance, both to individuals and to groups in their interactions with the state. Sometimes that's the state at local level, but sometimes they act as mediators as well, working with local TDs. So they do a lot of representation work. They attend a lot of events, and they senior people, I suppose, who become mayors in local authority areas have really significant kind of visible roles in terms of representation, attending events and engaging, in fact, in kind of international events in their local areas, representing the city or the county. So I don't think there's anyone who really thinks that they don't do a lot of work. There were reports actually in the last couple of years, which they did result in their salaries being increased, but it's still understood as a part-time job. But that work did acknowledge that they do a great deal of work. But perhaps it could be more effective if we gave them more powers, but we definitely also need more councillors.
It sounds like a lot of busy work they have to do. That's the truth. Not that it's not appreciated, you know, having your mayor represent you when you twin with the town in Switzerland or whatever, and vice versa. That's all to the good. Makes people feel proud of where they live. But, you know, the power to change anything, a set of traffic lights, you know.
Well, Limerick is the bright spot on the horizon in relation to that. So most of our mayors across the country they have a representative role. And here in Cork, it's the Lord Mayor, and same in Dublin. And it's that kind of symbolic role that you mentioned. But there is a change coming. And in 2019, the voters in Cork, Limerick and Waterford were offered the opportunity to have a directly elected mayoral position. And the voters of Limerick embraced that. And on the 7th of June, they're going to be voting for a directly elected mayor who will have some executive powers. The legislation will give them important roles in relation to the budget for the whole city and county of Limerick. And it is a much more expanded role in local government. It's a bit of an experiment. It's wonderful for Limerick that they're getting to do this. And we can only hope that, you know, these kinds of opportunities will be spread out across the country.
And what happens
once we see how it works?
Just to clarify, what happens to the county manager when you have a mayor, a directly elected mayor? Who's the boss?
Their roles have been separated out, and the county manager will have a smaller but still quite a significant role, but particularly in relation to the management of staff and HR functions and ensuring kind of financial management occurs effectively. The directly elected mayor will be responsible for setting the overall budget and getting that passed, but the delivery day to day will still remain an administrative function which will be overseen. So there are important HR and finance functions that will remain with the executive.
All right, well, we look forward to this experiment, how it unfolds. Dr. Teresa Reedy, Senior Lecturer in the Department of Government and Politics at University College Cork, co-editor of Politics in the Republic of Ireland. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.